Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and a current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." We as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing, therefore get wisdom." With all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon, and you can stream your program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you'll always see interesting content being posted daily by myself or Brother Richard. And do me a favor before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening Media. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, and share with your friends. Also check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the BB Toomey. Always interesting things being put in the marketplace all the time. Different African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So again, make that one of your favorites and put it in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. It's 7:08 here in the city of Philadelphia on this hot Sunday evening. Here in the city, looked like it had been a little thunderstorms or threat of thunderstorms, but we're inside and we're going to move forward with the program, and we're in open forum this evening. Have a little dialogue with the listening audience. It's always fun to do that. A couple things we want to throw out for conversation, always, but you can always join in and throw out something that you want to talk about, and you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. Again, that's 215-490-9832. We'll be right back to get the program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if, when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. for podcasting or live program scheduling. Hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-hosts, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here at 7th and Arch Street in Philadelphia, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I think the heat and the humidity and the moment, you know, I'm excited because we're in August, right? And it seems like this August, I don't know, Elliot, it seems like this August is more dynamic than maybe some recent other August is, a lot's going on this month. We're dealing with, what's that, Black August, We're dealing with the RBG 100. I seen that Ron Walters, you know, were and dealing with had the Caribbean world pulled together and expressing around reparations. I mean, and then, you know, all the other activities that's going on through the month. I'm just glad that we're energized, and you know, yes, I'm just glad that we're energized.
And it's intergenerational, Richard. It's in fact, it's more young people involved in a lot of these events than it is an older crowd, which tells us something. It tells anybody that's really looking at what's going on something. And it's, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's something I want to bring up a little later in the conversation about something that was said at John Lewis's funeral. And it coincides with something one of our callers mentioned to us. It might have been last week, about comments from Jim Clyburn.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of ties in with what you're talking about, Richard. But you know that in Cobra had their convention early in the week. Well, it was July 30th to the 1st, which was, in fact, it ends today.
Mm.
And maybe we can get Cam to come on and kind of recap things and talk about some of the things that went on during the convention, share it with our listening audience. I'll have to check with Brother Jamoke with the conversation reparations, because I don't want to step on his toes. If he's going to have Cam on, that's good. We usually kind of let Cam spend a little more time. Well, we'll see. We'll see how things go. Either way, the listening audience will get the information on what went on and things planned for upcoming months. I know locally the membership meeting is scheduled for next week. So there'll be a lot of things talked about, and I know they're going to kind of recap things from the convention also. So there'll be some things that be able to share with the listening audience on the next program.
You know, Elliot, can I just add, you know, to the importance of, as you mentioned, about reparations and all the activities and energy is this month, how important, and to the Time for Awakening audience, I'm like really speaking to us, right? How important that this, I'm going to call it a transitional period, when we have this intergenerational energy and these events and strategies being played out, how important it is for us to become more conscientious about being organized. And I think in our discussion as we move forward, we'll see why. And I don't know if you agree with me, Elliot, but unless we are socially organized, we do not have power.
I totally agree with that. In fact, that's why you see a lot of these other folks, no matter what religious persuasion they are, a lot of these people kind of play on our disorganization.
Mm.
And they kind of set things up where they organize us in the fashion that they would like. And we see that played out all the time. That way, when things come across that they figure is a uneven tone, they can easily come against them. So, you know, I do agree with the statement that you just made, though.
Yeah, it's just so important for us to do that. And it's interesting that you use the word of disorganized, because that was what Mr. Garvey, and the UNIA propagates, is that, the greatest weapon used against the Negro is disorganization.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And as we're looking towards the 22nd century, and as we're looking towards, 2021 and dealing with this moment, and that's why, it's just so important for us to emphasize, that those men and women who are, political prisoners, who are, the call, for Black August, that they were organizing, socially organizing, and they paid the price. And that's why we should be honoring or recognizing them. But we need to know that we need to be all the time, each one of us, be paying a price. Other than that, we're you know, really setting ourselves up for our own extinction, not demise. Demise means you just lose what you got. Well, at this point right now, we're probably worse off than when we were in chattel slavery. So we're looking at extinction, as I said, or at least a large portion of us.
Hey, listen, we've had so many people on here that say the same thing. So that many of our guests from different persuasions, from different fields of study, that come up with the same conclusion. So, you know, it's undeniable. It's a lot of things that, some things I want to throw out for discussion this evening, Richard, and listen, the audience can kind of chime in or bring up whatever they want. Locally, Richard, and you're familiar with it, some of the listening audience may or may not be familiar. They are familiar with the football player that played for the Philadelphia team, DeSean Jackson, made statements about 3 weeks ago in reference to people of the Jewish persuasion or faith. Nick Cannon, about a week later, said some things and was attacked. Both of the men were attacked and lost millions of dollars, both of them. Nick Cannon with programs being taken off the air, and DeSean Jackson with money being taken directly out of his pocket. Minister Adi Muhammad, who is the head here of Mosque Number 12 in Philadelphia, and also the head of the Philadelphia chapter of the NAACP, posted a comment and a meme or cartoon. What was it, about a week and a half ago now, Richard? 2 weeks?
Yeah, 2 weeks.
And he was attacked, saying the remarks was anti-Semitic, and they demanded he apologize and step down from his post. Since then, Minister Adi Muhammad has issued an apology without really coming out and saying he apologized. He has issued a statement in reference to an apology. It's not accepted by the Jewish community. They want him to, I don't know what they expect. They want him to really apologize. I don't know how you can apologize any more than what he did. And they still want him to step down. So far, it's been no response from Minister Muhammad. There was an article printed in a Jewish paper, that I want to share with the listening audience in reference to what's been going on and some of the comments made. For the listening audience that's not aware, members of the ADL, Jewish groups here locally and nationally, had a Zoom meeting where black elected officials here, black clergy, some members of black clergy, the head of the state NAACP was involved, and several of them called for Mr. Rodney to step down. The thing about that, Richard, several of these black elected officials and clergy members, who Minister Rodney Muhammad is a clergy member, consider him a friend and a friend of the community. But they're demanding he step down. Some of them without even really talking to him. Now, he's been on a couple of the programs here on terrestrial radio here in Philadelphia. I reached out through Brother Jihad Ahmed, who does the program on Monday. I'm trying to give Jihad an opportunity to have Minister Rodney on before I kind of, because I don't, he has a connection with Minister Rodney. He's a member of Mosque Number 12, and I think that he should, have him on first. So I'll kind of wait on Brother Jihad in reference to that. But I do want to share this published report, Richard, because I don't think you've seen it.
No.
Share it with the listening audience. And this is from a Jewish paper called The Forward. Published a couple of days ago, in fact. Philadelphia NAACP President Rodney Muhammad apologizes for anti-Semitic image but won't resign. Despite calls for the resignation of Rodney Muhammad for posting an anti-Semitic meme on Facebook, the National NAACP said it has decided with him to meet with community leaders and faith leaders to open a dialogue and to also launch a national conversation to further understanding. Meanwhile, the Facebook page of the mosque where Muhammad is minister is still filled with anti-Semitic posts. Those of you who say that you are Jews, I will not give you the honor of calling you a Jew. You are not a Jew. You're a so-called Jew. You're Satan. And it's my job now to pull the cover off Satan and let every Muslim, where he sees Satan, pick up a stone and read a post of mosque number 12 in Philadelphia. This was a recent post. I'm sorry. Reads a recent post of mosque number 12 in Philadelphia. In a statement, the National NAACP did not address these additional posts. It said that when Muhammad posted the meme last Friday, he was unaware that it has a history of anti-Semitic propaganda. Upon realizing his mistake, he immediately took it down, as well as the associated caption. He also acknowledged and apologized for his error in judgment. The meme is a drawing of an anti-Semitic caricature, a smiling, bearded Jewish man wearing a yarmulke, rubbing his hands together, while a large hand below presses down on several people huddled together. Above it are color photos of the rapper and actor Ice Cube, Philadelphia Eagles player DeSean Jackson, and television host Nick Cannon. All three men are prominent African Americans who have come under heavy criticism for recent anti-Semitic comments or sharing anti-Semitic social media posts. The cartoon also included the caption, "To learn who rules over you, simply find out who are you are not allowed to criticize." It was attributed to the French philosopher Voltaire, but actually it is said to have been uttered by a neo-Nazi white supremacist. The Anti-Defamation League said it was drawing itself. Well, let me skip down a little bit here, Richard, just for the sake of time. Minister Rodney Muhammad, 68, is the minister of the Nation of Islam and worked with the organization's leader, Minister Louis Farrakhan, in 1995 to organize the Million Man March. Farrakhan also made derogatory remarks about Jewish people over the years. He has called Jews bloodsuckers and, okay, let's go down here. This is the part I want to get to. Many African Americans, political and religious leaders, have called for Muhammad's resignation, including Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf and State Senator Anthony Hardy Williams, who said the Philadelphia chapter of the NAACP should remove Muhammad from office if he does not resign. As his reaction to the national NAACP saying it will launch a national national conversation to further understanding, Williams said, "I think someone in the Jewish community has to say if that's acceptable or not. I'm not sure how an organization that was founded in part by Jews would feel about having such a conversation." Asked if he has seen an apology from Muhammad, Williams replied, "I haven't seen it. I don't know that he has." Regarding the NAACP's claim that Muhammad says he was unaware of the anti-Semitic nature of the meme, Williams scoffed, "I can't accept that a studied minister would not know an anti-Semitic or racist image, and the image represented racism as well as anti-Semitism. It's hard for me to understand that it's not something that he would have not understood." Iman Saladin Mushahin, an African-American with the community of Imam Waruddin Muhammad, said he supported the idea of a national conversation, but you have to know who is invited. I can't be run without other Muslim leaders there. There are scholars of the Holy Quran who are former members of the Nation of Islam. And if you're talking about any racial harmony and Muslims, you want someone who is going to bring to the table the book itself. He cannot speak exclusively for Muslims because of his school of thought is not from the Nation of Islam. David Heyman, former president of the Philadelphia chapter of American Jewish Committee, said he was not totally surprised to see Muhammad's anti-Semitic meme because he is affiliated with the Nation of Islam and it's not out of character for that organization. Asked if he wanted to see Muhammad resign, Heyman says, I would welcome a transition. It would be pleased if the local members made another selection. I think it's overdue for him to step down. Philadelphia has a history back from the 60s to the 70s of strong ties with the Jewish community. He noted the Jewish Federation of Greater Philadelphia convened a press conference Tuesday to address this issue and that many African-American leaders attended. The head of the state NAACP, two state senators, a city councilwoman, and labor leaders, all African-Americans standing with the Jewish community in outrage. So as bad as the situation is, I am amplified to see our community standing together to express outrage. Richard, what's your opinion on that? And your opinion of Anthony Williams' remarks, and let me read them again, because he's speaking for the Jewish community when he's saying this, because he's supposed to represent the black community, but I don't think black people as a whole agree with these comments. Let me read them. Anthony Hardy Williams, Democrat from Philadelphia, said that the NAACP should remove Rodney Muhammad from office if he does not resign. Asked his reaction to the National, saying that it will launch a national conversation for further understanding, Williams said, I don't think someone in the Jewish community has to say that that is acceptable or not. And no, excuse me, I would think someone in the Jewish community has to say whether that's acceptable or not. I'm not sure how an organization that was founded in part by Jews will feel about having such a conversation. Richard, what is this? What are these people doing that are, you know, I used the term before when I used an analogy of a football team, and you're trying to get to the quarterback, but it's an offensive line there keeping you away. These black elected officials are like an offensive line. And anytime anything happens, they're called to the fore to answer for the community.
I have said that this getting going down this rabbit hole of having the our discussion around Jewish organizations and the influence and power they have, in comparison to just us as far as we're opening about the social organizational power that we have as a people. And in this case, even when we talk about an organization, and you mentioned a couple, the political organization, black political organization, the black Christian clergy organization, and the black Islamic organization. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I want to, because sometimes the language makes it talk about people when we're talking about power relationships between organizations. And when you say use Hardy Williams as as an example, or any politician, we recognize we enunciate all the time as black people that they're not delivering, or if they're delivering, we can't see it as being a part of the political body that is supposed to be bringing home the goods and services that would increase our quality of life, especially over the last 50, 60 years. So, the thing about that part of the black organization. One thing that is striking me about this moment is the propaganda, right?
Okay.
Because what is it that this here oddities and in each one, it seems like what comes out as the solution is supposed to be this national dialogue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, we on one hand of the propaganda is the apology. Now, what does that say? I mean, because propaganda is utilized to be able to put forth a message from the symbol that others would respond to. So here you have, whether it be entertainers, leaders of civil rights organizations, or, you know, which had some notoriety, especially in the recent week with one of the icons of the civil rights, you know, movement, you know, or of the nonviolent movement being, you know, put to rest. We're getting this symbol of you have to apologize. Well, how does that reverberate through as a propaganda tool, as a symbolic propaganda tool? How does that reverberate through our community? But going to this, the response of, and, you know, this is my first reaction, you know, to what you're putting out there. What is this that we're supposed to be in dialogue about?
Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Right? I mean, and this goes from the perspective of the strength of these organizations. Now, we can, I mean, and Elliot, and I might get some flack for this, because if we're saying organizationally, socially, we are from that perspective, we are weak, right? And because we're weak, you know, people can take advantage of us, even use us, right? Then we can be able to do a whole lot like a child. And I'm trying to say that we're politically and powerly, from a power perspective, organizationally, immature, you know, because we don't have enough power to say, well, hold up. You know, because it seems to me this here national dialogue, we're being pulled into it. We're not initiating it.
No. No, and wait a minute, Richard. I'm glad you mentioned it, because our people been trying to have a dialogue with you, and I ain't putting it on no Jews, no somebody's religious belief. Put that over to the side. Europeans, because that's what we're talking about. Our people been trying to have dialogue with Europeans since our ancestors were enslaved. They've been trying to have dialogue with these people, and it don't work. If you look at some of the dialogue and the so-called solutions that was put forth and things that was supposed to have been implemented, and you see the double cross, it's many instances, not just one, it's many instances through our historical experiences here with Europeans where our people have been double crossed, triple crossed. So the dialogue part, as far as I'm concerned, with Europeans is over. We need to do what we have to do as a people. You know, I hear Europeans get on, it's time for the difficult conversation. What kind of difficult conversation that you supposed to be having, that black people supposed to be having with Europeans? Are you kidding me? That's insulting. Don't even come to me with that bull crap.
You know, I mean, and that's why I wanted to frame this in a sense of propaganda, right? Because going to the point where we at right now, we're seeing a energy within the black world. Look at the black world calling for reparations. Look at the black world saying to France that, you know, you're no longer going to take money, 60% of our money out of our countries to finance you. Look at the black world in North America that saying, you know, with Owen Cobra just coming out of this convention, saying black people saying, we want redress. Right? Now, it's ain't nobody, we ain't saying we want a dialogue. We saying we want resolution. Because there, as you say, there is no need for us to have a dialogue. Like, if you don't know by now what you've been doing, you are just confirming what we're saying to each other. Something wrong with you. That's what, but the way the framing of the propaganda and the way the framing because of the weakness of our economic and political and our positioning right now, they're making it, they're using these symbols of somebody posting a picture or misconstruing what somebody said and then coming out as if that is supposed to, we're going to slap you and teach you and put you in the right frame of mind.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We're going to give you instructions on how you're supposed to do this. You don't come up with anything on your own without our involvement. We got to be involved in everything you do. Listen, Richard, it's tantamount to how your children was when they were coming up.
There you go.
And you needed to be, you know where they at, know what they're doing, monitor their activities and everything else. What's the difference in that type of relationship that they want to have with black people and using hand-picked black leaders to help propagate that type of foolishness? This is nothing new. To some of our people that don't know history, and that the thing I don't like, Richard, is hearing black folks. I heard two black hosts on a local terrestrial station this week, and including this clown, Williams, in his article, say something about Jews starting that organization, which is true. But they don't talk about why. And W.E.B. Du Bois, who was instrumental in partnering, starting that organization, he quit that organization later and said why he quit. That's not talked about. Yes. Let me read something here, Richard. And this is accounts from some of our people who was active at that time. Hubert Harrison, who, if our folks don't know about Harrison, take some time to study some of those men during that period. Cyril Briggs, Hubert Harrison, CLR James. It was a lot of people during that period that was active out there. Along with, the icon of it was Marcus Garvey. But you had Booker T. Washington. You had W.B. You had a lot of Ida B. You had a lot of our people that was active at that time. Now, let me read something that Harrison said in this biography. And it's a couple of paragraphs, but I think it's key. And then I want to read a paragraph or two from W.B. Du Bois' account in the Dusk of Dawn, which was printed in, what, 1931 or 32, Richard?
Mm-hmm.
This was years after that organization was started. Let me just read a couple paragraphs here. And this is Woodrow Wilson, when World War II broke out, they wanted blacks to be involved. Just like in a lot of these other wars, they immediately needed black folks' participation. And they talked about blacks not being patriotic, and they had to prove their patriotism. That's what Woodrow Wilson was putting out. Now, this is Harrison's response to it, Hubert Harrison. It says, Hubert Harrison fired his second blast at the Wilson administration as it... Hold on one second. I'm sorry. Harrison fired his second blast at the Wilson administration as its continued refusal to enact a federal law against lynching that would permit the prosecution and punishment of racist mobs if their own states continued to let them burn out black families and businesses and lynch blacks without court trial. Until white men in this country can put patriotism ahead of race, I shall not. Harrison wrote in 1918. So long as they will treat us like niggers rather than federal citizens, will those of us who respect themselves keep from fighting for a damn Jim Crow democracy whose tangled threads of hypocrisy, cant, and cruelty will leave a dangerous web across the nation's path of self-respect. Harrison, Trotter, and other blacks organized a Liberty Congress to be held in Washington, D.C. on June 1918. They would draw national and worldwide attention on a president who proposed to be fighting to make the world free for democracy while refusing to outlaw lynching and grant blacks full citizenship and end legal segregation. The Wilson administration countered by recruiting NAACP chairman Joel Springham, a friend of Du Bois, to prevail upon Du Bois and other handpicked blacks to head off the Liberty Congress by holding an elite editors' conference the week before. The planners agreed that the grouping would call for a federal anti-lynching bill so not to harm the morale of U.S. troops and on the home front. Meanwhile, a Boston-based military intelligence officer tried to get Trotter out of Harrison's conference. It didn't work. Harrison, Trotter, and a much broader, more militant group of African Americans held the Liberty Congress anyway. Over 6 days, they revealed to the world the hypocrisy behind the U.S. government's refusal to outlaw lynching in the so-called land of the free. Harrison learned that Du Bois had agreed to support Springard, in return. Du Bois believed for a commission as a captain in the U.S. Army. The Army disappointed that hope. In his later analysis, however, Harrison wrote in his 1920 call for black unity in an essay called Close Ranks by telling a group, I didn't want to continue to go down there, but I just wanted to mention, Richard, when these men were trying to do something in 1918 and they called for W.B. Du Bois to be involved, you see that the government called on this guy Springard to head off what they were doing and use Du Bois and others to do it. And the men wrote about it. Now, we see what happened there. You see that the so-called friend of the black community wanted to direct black people's paths. You see here where black men wanted to stand up, have their own Congress, and to dictate which way the people were going to go. But Woodrow Wilson, who was an avowed racist, managed to get Joel Springard to convince W.B. Du Bois. I mean, this is not the image that that black people get, of these folks that's supposed to be a friend of black people. Woodrow Wilson hated blacks. He screened that Birth of a Nation at the White House and said that was the greatest film ever made. You remember that, Richard?
Oh, yeah.
But he managed to, according to accounts here by Hubert Harrison, which I believe more than any of these other people, it mentioned here that the Wilson administration countered by recruiting NAACP chairman Joel Springham to prevail on Du Bois and other handpicked blacks to head off to Liberty Congress.
And from what I understand, Springard was telling Du Bois that he was trying to get him that commission. Right. So this was going on. But, you're touching on something like really powerful that gets lost when we get into the analysis. Right. Because you're bringing in the military and the president. Right. Who is dictating to try to starve off. Look at the period. We're in 2020. Starve off a authentically black organizational formation looking from an authentically black people's perspective in spite of anybody else of what should be addressed. And that all the way up to the president is saying that needs to be warded off, diffused, and they're going to even offer utilizing their connection, which is a Joel Spingard, who was an officer, to try to recruit the boys in order to assist to stop this authentically Black organization from organizing, because they wanted, you know, the campaign was, you know, black men were going into, were being forced into that war. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That means even though they were being denied to fight on the front line,
mm-hmm,
in that war, but at the same time, the South was still at the peak of its lynching. And the concern was, what's going to happen when them soldiers come back with the experience of killing Germans?
And listen, we can see now, those men didn't see it because they were living it. We can see now, looking back at history, what did happen. That's why we should learn from our historical experiences with any of these people and don't make the same mistakes.
And the biggest happening of that moment, but I don't want us to lose track of the propaganda in the now of that's being reverberated, but used in that period, because what happened in 1919? I mean, wasn't it one of those?
That was the Red Summer, wasn't it?
Yep, right.
Blood, our people's blood was spilled all over this country.
And others were too. But the point that those young men who were coming back were trying to convince, we are patriotic. We want to prove our citizenship. You know, we want to prove not only that, but then the discussion of the colonization of those African countries. Because didn't they sit the lead? And reinstitute the carving up of 1884 by being able to act out what those European countries would have control over those African countries? Portugal, Belgium with Leopold, England, France, right? So this was a global thing going on. And United States was pushing for the Panama. Wasn't they trying to expand the Panama Canal?
Yeah, during that same period, yep.
So the question about, and taking it to the NAACP, taking it to Spingard, and those people who control that, and those organizations, which we know that Jewish organizations, I don't know about Jewish people, but I know those Jewish organizations, those Jewish wealthy individuals sitting in those positions of those Jewish organizations and being a part of those Black organizations or trying to influence those Black organizations.
Oh, they weren't trying. They was influencing. Unquestionably,
I'm a chump, Elliot. Let
me read their work. Now, we already seen what Hubert Harrison felt about what had went on and what the Woodrow Wilson administration did recruiting Spring on. Now, let's go and see what W.B. Du Bois said in retrospect of him being involved in that organization. I'm going to read just a portion of the ninth chapter called Revolution in the Dusk of Dawn. It says, I started to organize and hold a Pan-African Congress in 1921. Now, keep in mind, this book was written in 31 or 32, Richard, if I'm not mistaken. It says, I started to organize and hold a Pan-African Congress in 1921, which would be better attended and more carefully organized than the one in 1919. I found that the board of directors of the NAACP was not particularly interested. The older liberal white people did not envision Africa and colored peoples of the world. They were not interested in America and securing American citizens of my color their rights. They had no schemes for internationalism in race problems, and to many of them, it seemed they didn't want to undertake anything of the sort. Then, too, there were colored members who had inherited the fierce repugnance towards anything African, which was the natural result of the older colonialization schemes, where efforts at assisted and other forcible explorations of American Negroes had always excluded Africa. Negroes in the organization were bitterly opposed because such schemes were at the bottom of any effort to make slavery in the United States more secure, to get rid of the free Negroes. Beyond this, they felt themselves American, not African. They resented and feared anything coupling Africa with Negroes in America. Now, Richard, this is Du Bois saying this,
mm-hmm.
that when he wanted to start or do the Pan-African Congress in 1921, that liberal whites in the organization wasn't interested. That wasn't their vision for black people. Mm-hmm. And then he said that Negroes in the organization wasn't interested either. And they were more repugnant than the whites of anything talking about Africa.
And I want to be emphasized, that's a certain class of Negro.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because we get to 1920 and we see how many, if you take the number, how many filled Madison Square Garden when that 25,000 was there for that convention? That's 1920. And he's talking about 1918. So they obviously, those, and not only that, before that, those who signed up to fight with the Ethiopians against the Italians. So it's a certain, I just want to emphasize, when we talk about these black politicians, this group, ministers, who is in a league with having this national dialogue, in 2020, and allowing even the entertainers to be pulled in so that a organizational leader, a Jewish, whatever they call them, is going to take somebody to school so that they can get some understanding because they don't.
Oh, man. Boy, I'm telling
right?
you.
Right? And I want, and, you know, and I think it's important that we put it in the context of an organization. Right? Mm-hmm. And a class of people. And also that this mindset amongst this black class of people that Du Bois, because Du Bois starts to riff because he's upset.
Yeah.
And he's starting to see. Like, you Negroes is taking us down a road to our demise. And yeah. I'm recognizing the wrong of my ways, and I'm at least presenting, and y'all are fighting me because they say they don't want to go down that road. Not that that's not the best road for us, that they don't want us to go down that road. And what I want to take it back a little further, Elliot, to show this class within us, because we have to deal with this. We have to deal with the propaganda from the president, the State Department, the military, and utilizing a ally called these Jewish organizations, right? I mean, we talk all the time about this $20 billion that comes out of the Congress that goes to the state of Israel, and how is it that a country that is getting regularly this kind of money, and here we are in North America, in the longest continuous population within this country that has shown loyalty all along, and we can't get $20 million. If we ask for $10, $15 an hour, we got a challenge. Taking it back to 1864, the Equal Rights League. I'm if just a couple of sections to reemphasize the point that this mindset, that when you talk about, what's that politician name you just mentioned?
Hardie Williams.
Hardie Williams.
Mm-hmm.
These people ain't no new thing in the way they're serving us up. 1864, 145 delegates of the National Convention of Colored Men assembled on October 4th in Rochester, New York. I ain't even going to go into the list. And I'm getting this out of, we will be satisfied with nothing less. The African-American struggle for equal rights in the North during Reconstruction, right? This is 1864. Because what the linkage is, this National Equal Rights League ties into what Monroe Trotter brings back in 1908. And you mentioned that group, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this organization goes back to 1864. This is their first convention that convention is putting together this National Equal Rights League. The league that one of, for those who are in Philadelphia, one who becomes the secretary, the corresponding secretary that they just put a monument up for Octavius Cato, right? He becomes the secretary for Pennsylvania delegation. The thing that gets me, Elliot, the consideration of who's going to go, something that we had discussion here, the principle of proportional representation appears to have been the only loosely applied in determining the representation at the convention. These guys were so organized that they were looking at from the delegates who will go based off of the proportional representation. Aren't we saying that when we look at the African Party talking about proportional representation?
Mm-hmm.
Right? But this is the 145 delegates. This is this value system of these people. At the same time that the delegates vigorously demanded suffrage and other rights as citizens, they also reminded whites that their effort would in no way infringe on whites' liberties or limit their power. I don't know how y'all translate that. Let me say that again. Can I just take another second just to repeat this?
Go ahead.
At the same time that the delegates vigorously demanded, now they're there for to demand equal rights. Now this is 1864. When do the 15th Amendment come into being? 1870. So they ain't voting. They're demanding in 64. Putting an organization together so that they can lobby vigorously to have the right to vote, because these free Negroes don't vote. And states was taking their right to vote. In Pennsylvania, they had the right to vote from 1780 and they took it away in 1836 at the state level. So here they put together an organization, but they're telling white folks, don't be afraid that we're getting organized. We're not going to infringe on what you're doing, what you got, on your liberties, and limit their power over who? I mean, they always got power over black people, right?
Mm-hmm.
We ain't going to do that. So you're going to push for something, but you ain't going to push for the removal of the getting your that knee off your neck, right? Last point. This is the Douglas. You are strong. We are weak. You are many. We are few. You are protected. We are exposed. The National Equal Rights League, which the convention established, sought especially to reassure white America that blacks did not wish to create discord or engage in radical action. So when you talk about Herbert Harrison, Monroe Trotter, were they talking about radical action as it relates to America, as it relates to Woodrow Wilson? Would that be considered we looking out for our own such self-interest? Would that be considered radical action?
They considered it radical.
That's it. This ain't white folks talking.
This I mean, listen, Richard, to any human being, that would be considered a natural response to look out for your own affairs and to look out for the own affairs of your people and your children, to come up with ways and solutions to move them forward. But to other people, just like you said, that was considered a radical reaction right. or radical response.
And this group was saying, making it clear. I'm just picking that point because it relates to the point that you raised and it relates to this situation here. Because when black folks said in 72 at the Black Power Convention that Israel's response to the Palestinians was unacceptable. It was the newly formed Congressional Black Caucus that pulled away from that unity effort of black people at that point in time. There's a pattern here, I'm trying to say.
Oh, most definitely. And I'm glad that you mentioned the Black Caucus, because I was trying to draw a historical parallel when I talked about Du Bois and Harrison at that time, around 1918, 1920, and their relationship with Anglos, period, whether they be Jewish or not. Now, here we go. Let's move up, and I want to thank one of the regular calls to the show, Germantown Joe, because we had a conversation the other day, and he reminded me of what Milton Coleman did when Jackson was running for president and took a statement that Jackson made off the record and took it back to you and reported it. Now, that's tantamount, Richard, to, I mean, you know this, you hear the thing about attorney-client privilege or, you know, a doctor's oath. I can't go to a doctor and say, listen, what's Richard's health? Does Richard have cancer? They're not supposed to divulge that type of information. Now, when you say something that's off the record, it's not supposed to be exposed. But he reported something that was off the record. And later on, Richard, the organization who he was a member of that was started by one of the legends here, radio legends, Reggie Bryant, the Association of Black Journalists, called him on the carpet for what he did. If you look at where he is now, you see that he was rewarded for what he did. I think now, presently, he's the, and I pulled it up just to see what he was doing now. And it says Milton R. Coleman is the, he teaches journalism and ethics and diversity at Arizona State's Walter Cronkite School of Journalism and Mass Communications. Ethics and journalism? Mm-hmm. Milton Coleman? I mean, are you kidding me? But he did something and he was rewarded for it. Now, let's look at something that was, and before I read this, Richard, because I want to get some of these callers involved. I want to share something that Minister Farrakhan said about that incident with Milton Coleman that black people should have been adopting a long time ago. But I want to share this before I deal with that thing about the Black Caucus that you mentioned. If I can get this thing pulled up. Hold on 1 second. Kind of put this thing together here from a old TV clip. I hope it sounds right.
So I took Milton Coleman to task. I referred to him in the language of a traitor. I referred to him, and these are the actual words. I said that that man should be ostracized from us. When he comes to church, tell him, you're not wanted until you repent. This is what I said. And then I said, one day, soon, when we have a nation We will punish our traitors with death like you punish yours. Now, just a minute. Let me finish. I talked to Milton Coleman. I want you to know this, Phil, and your audience. I talked to Milton Coleman by telephone right after it came out in the press that I threatened his life. And when I said to Milton, Milton, I did not threaten your life, nor your children's, nor your wife's. Milton said to me, Farrakhan, if you will go before the public and say that, I'll sit down and talk with you. I said, Milton, I'll do one better than that. I said, I'll be on Nightline tonight, and I will say it on national television. He said, where will you meet with me? I said, I'll meet with you anywhere you want to meet. And Milton said, will you meet me at the Washington Post? I said, yes. I went on Nightline and made that statement. And the next day I called Milton Coleman, and Milton Coleman told me that the people at the Washington Post forbid him from seeing me. That was 6 years ago. And the other day I sat in front of Milton Coleman at the Washington Post for the first time in 6 years. I brought it up and scolded these white folk who kept me from reconciling a difference with my brother. You cry about how joyful it is that the walls are tumbling down in Germany, but you are busy erecting walls, keeping brothers from coming together with their own.
And we'll be back in just a moment.
Now, Richard.
There you go.
That was a little similar to what happened with Du Bois.
Mm-hmm.
And Hubert Harrison. A pattern. Now, let's move up, because that incident with Jackson happened in the 80s, 84, 85, something like that. Let's come up a little bit, and I'm going to deal with what you talked about, the caucus. In September 17th, according to a press release of 1993, the Black Caucus did something that they weren't supposed to do. And I think they might have been feeling themselves at the time. But let's see what happened after what they did. This here is a press release saying the Congressional Black Caucus and the Nation of Islam agree on an alliance. According to the press release, at a rare public gathering, a diverse group of African-American leaders pledged greater unity within their sometimes fractured ranks, including an announcement of more formalized working relationship between the Congressional Black Caucus and the Nation of Islam. In a declaration of unity that brought a standing ovation from the crowd that included factions that had been at odds in the past, Caucus Chairman Kwasi Nfume said, no longer will we allow other people to divide us. The agreement between the caucus and the often controversial Nation of Islam means that the two groups will consult on legislative issues, development of common strategies, and much like the caucus and the NAACP have done on other issues. The occasion was a caucus-sponsored town hall meeting entitled Race in America, in which Nfume, the Nation of Islam Minister Louis Farrakhan, NAACP Director Ben Chavis Jr., Representative Maxine Waters, and Jesse Jackson, a former presidential candidate, were brought together to discuss what all agreed was the sorry state of Black relations and solutions to the problems facing African Americans. In the process, some tension in the ranks surfaced unexpectedly and further underscored what all had agreed was the need for greater unity. But Nfume, in the spirit of unity, announced at the close of the program, we want the world, the word to go forward today to friend and foe alike, that the Congressional Black Caucus, after having entered into a sacred covenant to work for real, meaningful change, will enter into the same sacred covenant with the Nation of Islam and other organizations, fraternities and sororities and professional groups that want to work together. Now, this was a declaration or a sacred covenant that the Black Caucus said that they was going to work with the Nation of Islam. This was in September 17th of 1993. Now, Let's look at this article from October 7th of the same year, 1993. And this was out of the Jewish publication, the JTA.org. Black caucus ties with Farrakhan could harm cooperation with Jews, the Jewish Telegraph reports. New ties between the Congressional Black Caucus and the controversial Black Muslim leader Louis Farrakhan has cast a shadow on future Black Jewish cooperation on legislative issues. For the moment, at least, the future of such coalition work remains ambiguous as the Jewish community sorts out the implications and the extent of the warming relationship between the caucus and Farrakhan, who is viewed as anti-Semitic by many Jewish, by many in the Jewish community. Jewish groups and legislators have long worked closely with the caucus on such issues as civil rights, aid to cities, public education, and the fight against poverty. And the caucus, which currently comprises 39 members in the House of Representatives and one senator, have a long, solid support of Israel. But the relationship has been strained since mid-September when the caucus invited Farrakhan, leader of the Nation of Islam, to participate in a panel discussion. During the panel discussion, Race in America, the caucus chairman, Kwasi Nfume, said that the group would enter into a sacred covenant with the Nation of Islam. In a statement issued after the meeting, subsequently with Jewish groups, Nfume reiterated the caucus' intent on forging ahead with a relationship with Minister Farrakhan and any others who feel that they are committed to real and meaningful social change for our people. The new cooperation is the latest evidence of a growing acceptance of Farrakhan seen to be enjoying in the mainstream Black community. His cadre of, let me skip down a little bit. The caucus embrace Farrakhan signaled a declining importance of the Jewish community to Black community's interests, says one Jewish organizational official who met with Nfume. The implications of this could be a serious rift with the Jewish community. If it does mean that, then we have serious issues and to respect of what we will do, he told Nfume. Jewish groups and legislators are concerned at the direction of the Congressional Black Caucus was taking after this gathering last month quickly sought private meetings with Black Caucus members of Congress and soon after with Nfume. Two such meetings were held in Washington, D.C. that week, one with representatives of the Anti-Defamation League and the others with representatives of other national agencies. Several participants in the broader group meetings held a September 28th meeting also. The caucus chairman told them that he had been misquoted out of context and that he had spoken of a covenant with Farrakhan as well as that he had spoken of a covenant with Farrakhan as well as churches, mosques, and synagogues. During the meeting, Nfume clarified what had actually happened. The caucus did not embrace Farrakhan, he said, to Arthur Abramson, the executive director of Baltimore Jewish Council, who orchestrated the private meetings. There was a group for meeting with Minister Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam about the drug problem because of their activities, and they had been effective, he said. We explained to the congressman that the Jewish community at this point cannot work with any coalition with Farrakhan involved, and Fumi understood it. So, Richard, we see here that, again, they were dictating terms in which the community moved forward and told him unequivocally, where does all these mean? After they announced that they were going to have a sacred covenant. Now, I mean, everybody knows what the word sacred means. They had all of these flash meetings with Black elected officials, several meetings, according to this published report, asking what's going on. What are you doing? I'm just using layman's terms. What are you doing? We didn't get permission for this. What are you doing? and had the man backtracking. I just read the press release where he said no longer will we let other people dictate what we do. Didn't he say that in the press release?
There you go.
And all of a sudden it's a blah, 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 blah. It's a double talk. We didn't say that. We didn't do that.
What the hell?
See, this is a pattern. This is a pattern. And if you don't look at history, you see this stuff happening. Some of our people don't know what the hell is going on. Oh, that's great. Oh, this is nice. We got friends and allies in other communities. What? Do you realize what you study your history and then come up with then talk. After you educate yourself, then talk. Excuse me. Go ahead, Richard.
No. It's just study the history in relationship to the power relationships. You know what I mean? Because this is we're talking about a power relationship. And you see how the propaganda, because it's not the Nation of Islam. It's not the organization. They're making it Minister Farrakhan. He's the leader of an organization that is showing that they recognize was being effective. Aside, you know, Kwame Nkrumah is back, right? You know, he's back in Congress.
I know it. Okay. Here we go. Same soup warmed over.
Mm-hmm. And after leaving, he became the head of the NAACP, right? I mean, in 2006, I believe it is. So, you know, but if our dialogue, and that's what I was saying earlier about immaturity, if we get into name calling without defining. Because what you showed in documents, you know, or in reporting, right? And that Jewish press is making their audience, because that black people ain't reading that art, they're reading that paper.
I know it. Not in no right? Jewish, this is a Jewish Telegraph that I just read this out of.
Black people ain't reading that. So that message, that information is going out to the Jewish community, the organizations, the people who subscribe to that paper, and they're letting them know how they got this thing under control, right? But the point of what is the difference between Nkrumah and Cannon and Deshaun?
And you said what is the difference?
Right, and put in Rodney Muhammad, because I don't see any difference, right? Because they come back and they have to backtrack and apologize. I mean, it's not apology, but you're saying, well, what I said, I didn't really mean
to say it. Yeah. You see, Nkrumah said the same thing. I just read in the report where he said, no longer will we let other people dictate how we, in fact, let me read that again, just in case listening audience didn't hear it. Now I can't find it. Oh, excuse me. It says, no longer will we allow other people to divide us.
Mm-hmm.
And now, other people, I don't think he was talking about black folks. When he was talking about other people, I think he was talking about white folks, right. I would assume.
Right.
But right after that meeting, he was called on the carpet by several, according to this Jewish paper, several organizations.
Right. Organizations. You know what I mean? Because there ain't no organizations going to no black organizations coming to Nkrumah or the Congressional Black Caucus and say, well, what are y'all doing? Now, we might be, you know, individuals might be saying, look at what they did. I'm being critical here, because we have to stop this crying in the wilderness. If we're not organized and so creating the social organization, we're maintaining the power. And if we're not acknowledging there is a group, a class of black folks, E. Franklin Frazier defined them as the black bourgeoisie. The boys defined this class of folks that he said that they were not looking out for. And even during that time, during this time of this convention, this class of black folks who had the same discussion, this is 1864, had the same discussion with then Henry Highland Garnett and this wealthy black restaurateur named Downing, and they were, the debate on the business committee was saying that, and I know you want to go to the calls, take a break.
Go ahead, go finish your thought.
Garnett strongly opposed the committee's recommendation that each auxiliary pay, and they're talking about the delegates that will come to the assembly, they would have to pay, you know, each organization will have to pay. So you have to have a certain amount of money. So they're having the discussion in the business committee of how much money do the delegates have, for each delegate that's presented, will have to pay to the national organization. There's some good things in it, in the way they built it, but this is this friction. Garnett, George Downing was the person in opposition to Henry Highland Garnett. Garnett strongly opposed the committee's recommendation that each auxiliary pay $100 for the first delegate and $60 for each additional purpose. This is 1864, $100, right? Contending that it was a great mistake that would penalize the common people. When his attempt to substitute a fee of $10 was narrowly defeated, an amendment that established a $50 charge for the first delegate and $30 for each additional representative passed. Now, $50 still a lot of money in that time, right?
I know it.
But Garnett criticized even this compromise in a speech he delivered a few weeks following the convention. He claimed that a supporter of the amendment had told him, "We don't want the riffraff." Now, who is the riffraff?
Wait a minute. They said that when in 18... What did you say, 63?
64. Who is the riffraff?
Oh, my God.
I want us to be clear. And while you emphasize the importance of our historical understanding and our historical analysis, we ain't just talking to be talking. We have to place these things in context, what yes, we see
exactly
today. Because what you showed us to do, we're going from 1864 to 1994 to 2020.
You
this
know
ain't
what?
No new thing.
Before we take a break, go to the calls, I got to read, because you said we're going to 2020. Let me go to 2020, Richard. You know, you had some women go into Congress here last year, or when that Congress took their seats. I don't know whether it was last year, 2 years. They called them the squad, right?
Right.
It's two of them that's targeted now for removal.
Right.
Now, let me read something. See, you know, our people need to stop getting caught up with, oh, this person's running for God. He's black. He's this. You got to look at these people. You can't look at them for their complexion. You got to do research and see what's going on. It's too many of our people being used by these folks. Now, let me read this article. Now, this is from August 2nd. It's a year ago, Richard. August 2nd of 2019. Here it is, August 2nd of 2020. This is from the Jewish Telegraph. Now, last I looked, Detroit was 83% black. You know, there's a gentrification going on, so the numbers might have went down. But it's still overwhelmingly black. Somebody could punch it up. I know we got a lot of folks on there that do a lot of research. Brother Otis probably, he might have it in chat room before I even finished what I'm saying. But it's 83% black. Now, check this out. This is from August 2nd. Listening audience, listen to what's being stated here. It's from the Jewish Telegraph, Detroit. August 2nd, 2019. The Jews of Detroit, which hosted this week's Democratic presidential debate, are proud of their role in the recovery of their city. Scott Kaufman, CEO of the Jewish Federation here, describes efforts spearheaded by philanthropy to encourage younger Jews to move back in the city and the relatively youthful congregation at the downtown synagogues. Jewish leaders are especially proud of the role played by Dan Gilbert, the local boy who founded Quicken Loans and who had led the revitalization of the city. I can't tell you how often I've heard that I and other debate goers would not have been able to stroll safely down to the Fox Theater a decade ago, and that much thanks has to be given to Dan Gilbert for them to be able to walk around the city, Richard, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
Only one of the 14 participants in the pro-Israel lay leader would not be identified, but I was permitted to quote that person on the background, who, like the others, spoke in a personal capacity. I spoke with other folks around the city as well, and in and around the spin room, and here are the takeaways. Representative Rashida Tlaib must go. At the Jewish Federation roundtable, there was a consensus. The freshman of the 13th district has to go. We in this community will go against Rashida Tlaib, says Lisa Liss, a philanthropist who also is a contributor to the Democratic candidates and who otherwise during the roundtable was vocal in her criticism of Donald Trump. There were nods around the table. I was told that there had already been outreach to Brenda Jones, the Detroit City Council president, whom Tlaib defeated in last year's primary and who is considered another run. I was told that pro-Israel folks are already socking away money to target Tlaib. Now, Richard, you got a city that's 83% black, and they're already targeting the leadership of that city.
Mm-hmm.
That city is similar to Philadelphia with black council people, black this, black, everything's black. But they don't control their own city. This is what we're talking about here. You got this article here from the Jewish Telegraph in August 2nd saying, we don't want that woman. She's not going to represent Detroit anymore. We're going to get her out of there.
And again, emphasize.
And come up with it. And it came up with a consensus opinion. Because later on, and I didn't read all the stuff in the article,
right,
but
right.
Some of the Jewish folks didn't agree that that she should be removed. Because she allowed some things to happen where they could come back into the city, some things being refurbished and things of that nature. But the consensus opinion is that she's going to be removed, so she's going to be removed as far as they're concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And they threaded down
black votes in order to make that happen.
Yes, you're exactly right. So all of a sudden, here comes this Brenda Jones into the picture. Now, Brenda Jones had been... now check this out, because it was problematic when they raised her name. We'll target Brenda Jones. Now, this is from March of this year. Representative Rashida Tlaib was elected to Congress, has drawn the ire of many Jews during her first term for making statements that some saw as anti-Semitic. Now she has a serious primary opponent in her Detroit area district who many say has anti-Semitic baggage of her own. Detroit City Council President Brenda Jones announced Wednesday that she would be running in the Democratic primary against Tlaib. Jones narrowly lost in 2018 to Tlaib. Jones, who serves on the Detroit City Council since 2005, has long been outspoken supporter of the Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan, who has been accused of anti-Semitism for decades. Jones did not immediately respond to requests for comments. This article will be updated following the forward if they receive a response. Now, this is another Jewish paper that forward.
Mm-hmm.
The Nation of Islam holds its annual Savior's Day convention, and Jones has been a frequent participant in many of these events that have been held in Detroit. Farrakhan singled out Jones for praise and invited her on stage during 2018 speech, according to the Detroit News. And Jones told participants in 2014 that Farrakhan had addressed the council with awesome words. Jones did not attend the 2020 event last month and issued a statement saying she was excited to welcome Minister Farrakhan to Detroit and sent her chief of staff, Stephen Grady, to speak at the event. according to the Anti-Defamation League. O'Grady told the crowd that Jones was a supporter of the Nation of Islam and that she had sponsored a city resolution praising the Nation of Islam's paper, The Final Call, for its truthful articles and courageous journalism. The Final Call has often been frequently published anti-Semitic and racist pieces, according to the ADL. The JTA reported last year that several Jewish community members had concluded outreach to Jones to urge her to run against Tlaib. Now, that's somebody here, this Brenda Jones, that they said got her own baggage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was in March that it said that she would become a serious opponent. Now, this article here is from July 26th, a couple of days ago, Richard. Prominent developers, and this is from the Detroit, DeadlineDetroit.com. Prominent developers, pro-Israel lobby fund, prominent developers and pro-Israel lobby funds Brenda Jones' bid to oust Tlaib. A group of prominent Detroit real estate developers and pro-Israel super PACs and wealthy Trump supporters are all financially backing Detroit City's City Council President Brenda Jones' campaign against Rashida Tlaib. The Deadline Detroit analysis of the federal campaign finance records have found. Records reveal that the downtown Detroit's big city ticket developers appear to be rewarding Jones for her support in recent years. She's voted to approve at least $350 million worth of tax breaks that diverted money from Detroit schools to the city's largely suburban developers. Deadline Detroit found that those same developers have given effectively over $28,000 in direct donations to Jones' congressional campaign. Her campaign has reported about $135,000 in total direct donations, which means developers who receive tax breaks, according to her, over 18% of her haul. Developers contributed another $60,000 in independent expenditures for mailers attacking Tlaib, though that spending isn't coordinated with our campaign. Similarly, the pro-Israel lobby has spent at least $700,000 targeting Tlaib, along with other congresswomen who oppose its agenda. Though the money isn't donated to Jones, it appears the lobby is acting on its own. Tlaib drew national attention as the first Palestinian American elected to Congress that have spoken out, been an outspoken critic of Israel. Now, before I go to break, let me just read this. Detroit, the Deadline Detroit identified multiple prominent developers whose projects Jones have supported or may vote on soon. About a year ago, Jones voted to approve $30 million in tax breaks to the new chemical bank headquarters under construction downtown. She received $12,500 in contributions from the bank executives and project developers and their spouses. The projects would deliver $16 million from state and city schools. Developers also involved in high-profile projects in Detroit. Detroit developer Chris Jackson, concerned citizens of Michigan, spent more than $60,000 on highly misleading mailers attacking Tlaib, in addition to $500 in direct donations to Jones, and for nearly $2.7 million in tax breaks for a midtown project planned by Jackson's development company. That would divert about $230,000 from Detroit schools to Jackson.
Mm.
Jackson previously admitted under oath that he had brought a vote from a former Detroit City Council member, Monica Conyers, who was convicted of corruption charges. Hunter Pasture Homes, the company behind new housing development in Lafayette Park, is requesting a $7 million tax break, and the CEO of Farmington Hills Residence, Republican donor Randy Whitmire, gave Jones 3,800 which appears to be in excess of the donation's limit in violation of the campaign finance law. Dan Gilbert of Rock Holdings PACs have given $5,000 to Jones in the recent year. She voted to support in support of hundreds of millions in tax breaks to Gilbert's projects. The largest provided $250 million in incentives for four downtown Detroit buildings and diverted millions in from Detroit school money to Gilbert. And he's also received $28 million for Detroit's modern city project. Among the pro-Israel lobbies targeting Tlaib, Stars and Stripes Forever, a Trump-backed super PAC has spent over $9,000 in expenditures against Tlaib. And it mentions all these other PACs, Israel PACs, and some of these other ones that have given this woman money. Like any other ideology and type of group in the industry, it makes sense that the pro-Israel lobby would spend to support a candidate that is vocally supportive of their issues. However, it appears that some in the lobby and the Jewish leaders have withheld support from Jones. The lobby has already spent over $1 million in an attempt to defeat Minnesota Congressman Ilhan Omar. Well, that goes into something else. But
where does that come out of? What are you reading?
Deadline Detroit. DeadlineDetroit.com from an article that was a couple of days ago.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, I was reading that to show how they, you know, what is this undue influence that it has over black cities and their politicians? And it's they're the doing it through, well, I mean, we're just documenting how it's being done. We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to take some calls, get the callers involved. They've been waiting a long time. You're sharing some of this stuff here, and the time really flies by, but we're going to get all of them involved in the conversation, and you can do that too. $215-490-9832. And I wanted to share something about Ilhan Omar, but maybe I'll do that a little bit later. Again, you can get involved by dialing 215-490-9832. Time for an awakening. We'll be right back.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services if when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Escape the digital plantation. Habibitumi.com, ibbtumi.tv, ibbtumitv.com, ibbtumi.store are here for you. You are ready to be free of non-African social media. Don't run from danger, run to safety. ibbtumi.com is here for you. You are ready to be free of digital plantations to control your own products. ibbtumi.store is here for you. ABIBITUMI, Black Power, ABIBITUMI, the only word you need to know to join your global Kometsu Black family, to join your interconnected Kometsu Black communities. Escape the digital plantation now. ibbtumi.com, ibbtumi.tv, ibbtumitv.com, ibbtumi.store. We are here for you. Escape the digital plantation.
Know that this problem needs to be solved, and we can't keep relegating it to generation after generation because a few of us got a little money, a few of us got positions, a few of us have wealth, while the masses of our people are going steadily down. No one man can rise above the condition of his people. The brother said responsibility. Is it that we should let them take responsibility to do for us, or should we pool the knowledge that's at the table, the power that's in our community, the wealth that's in our community to change the harsh reality of black life in America? We have to do the job of fulfilling the black agenda. Thank you.
Have a message to the black man, because the black man today is a man who has been made now almost into a laughing stock. Nobody takes the black man serious. We're just used to be somebody's tool. We are the sportsmen, we're the singers and the dancers, and we're also labeled as the pimps and the criminals and the drug dealers and the killers and the vagabonds of society. We're the bogeymen of British society and other Western systems. And we want to dispel that lie and destroy those myths and put the black man back on the map where we belong. Who is the black man? The black man is the original man. If it wasn't for the black man, no other men could be on this planet. We are the fathers of humanity. We gave birth to all of you.
Watchman on the wall. You are too. You watch with a political eye. We watch from a spiritual eye. But we're supposed to be the watchman for the people that vote for us. The sad thing is, the people vote, but they don't give you the money to run your campaigns. So here come big business.
How are you? How are you, Judge? How are you, Alderman? How are you, Congressman? How are you? How are you, Reverend? Well, what can I do for you today, Reverend? You can't do nothing for me.
See, that's what we got to be careful of. We got to be careful of who we bow down to. You see, when you get in your congregation and you talk this Jesus, this powerful Jesus that's sitting at the right hand of the Father with all power in his hand, then you go with your hat in your hand to the governor, to the mayor, to the president, begging for some crumbs. You have sold your God cheap. And you make the white man downtown disrespect all of us. Yeah.
Time for an Awakening is a proud part of the Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent black digital and podcasting platform.
Welcome back. The time for an Awakening is 8:50 in the city of Philadelphia. And Richard, let's go to the phones and get the calls.
Yes.
Let's go to 267. 267.
Yes, Elliot.
Yes, sir.
Brothers, Elliot, y'all did some good research, man. I mean some good research, man. You went from Joseph Spingard to Garvey and Du Bois, and you brought it up to the Jesse Jackson campaign. And I thought about the first time that Jackson ran, the second time that Jackson ran, the relationship that Louis Farrakhan had with Jackson. And you have these people that are out looking for things to destroy or derail leadership, whether we think it's effective or not. Now, somebody does research on looking on who's saying something about Jews. That's interesting. They, you know, when Jesse made the statement, Hymetown, somehow somebody got a hold of that, took it and ran with it. Now, Roddy Muhammad, to the best of my knowledge from what I've heard him on the radio say, that he's not an offensive person, that he didn't mean to know what people thought that he might have known about this this situation that's gotten him in trouble on his page or his website. And people just blew it all out of proportion. But the thing of apology, right? Same thing with Jesse Jackson. We're going to take it back to the second campaign. He ran for the highest office of the land. They wanted him to apologize and repudiate Farrakhan. At that point, Farrakhan said, where is my allegiance to someone who is going to separate themselves from me? And we have a friendship. It goes better, further back than politics. And he's going to separate from me to run for the highest office in the land. What else would he do for them? And what is it about people who have money that can make you say and do what they want you to do and say? And how far can we go? And how much are we going to be connected to people to control us like that? And if you are in a position of authority or leadership or helping someone on any level, and if you call yourself an effective leader, that you would have somebody tell you to resign? I mean, we're pretenses. I mean, you know, when are we going to get out of this situation? When are we going to become our own people? And if we have people that would be that sensitive about us, how far would we get with that? Now, my thing to you is that they're asking Rodney to resign. They're going to probably run somebody against him anyway. He'd be a fool to resign. But if he does resign, that shows you where he's at. But at the same time, what is your idea of how they want you to apologize? I mean, what hoops does he jump through? And at that point, what type of person would tell him, what do they have to do with that? What business of that is theirs? In other words, what people went to Jesse Jackson and said, leave Farrakhan alone after all these years? And Jesse Jackson actually repudiated him.
Well, he didn't. Well, I think you got a little interference in your background, Tim.
Okay, let me move radio. Back. Well,
good.
Yeah,
but he's not the only one. Listen, that has been done. Obama did it, if you remember, when he was running. Yeah, he was involved in their church, right, married both him and his wife. I think his wife was a longtime member before Obama. She brought Obama to the church. And then all of a sudden, he repudiated him, disavowed him, to the point where in his wife's book, she trashed the man and equated him with the old racist mother, and the so-called mother and father-in-law she had through Obama, the white folks. She put him in the same bag with them. That's a disgrace, what she did. And what he did, what both of them did. But I'm just saying, that's nothing new when you see that happening. When in Fume, he said in the thing that the Black Caucus was going to get involved in a sacred alliance. But that sacred alliance was broken by Jewish organizations that called both him and other representatives on the carpet. So who was the sacred alliance with? And who did they consider sacred? If they didn't consider the relationship with their brother sacred, who in the heck, you seen who they considered sacred?
Now, I'm going to say this, that if it was Khaled, Khaled would not have apologized for anything. Now, I would say that, but he's not here now. Louis Farrakhan wouldn't apologize for nothing. Elijah Muhammad wouldn't definitely not apologize for anything. So what is going to be relationship with the Nation of Islam and Rodney, the relationship with Minister Farrakhan and Rodney, the relationship with the politicians and Rodney?
They're disgraced. Tim, you know, listen, those politicians, and you're here in Philadelphia, so you know that when anything happened, those same politicians and ministers have glowing words to speak of Rodney Muhammad. Oh, Minister Rodney's this, that. Even on that station, several of the hosts and station management always spoke of him in glowing terms. You know that.
But I agree.
All of a sudden, you hear crickets. You don't hear nothing.
And I just have to add, though, you know, the question is not about what Minister Rodney Muhammad do. The question is, how strong are we making the organizations that we need to make strong to stop this onslaught of being able to make people apologize for doing what is the righteous thing to do for us? That's the question on the table for me. Because they're going to continue. We, as you said, Elliot has shown that we could take the historical line, you know, to the turn of the last century. And we're looking at the same thing. So as we look towards the turn of the next century, what is it that we have to do? Because we could keep talking about what they're doing and never do anything different. They got the surrogates. They got the vehicles. And they're doing it, but it's something that we're not doing to where we can be able to say what we need to say when we need to say it, and people, if they don't like it, just have to deal with it.
I agree. That's the bottom line. That, and you know, people say to me, "Well, you know, whoever heard of a Muslim being president of NAACP?" I said, "Does it make a difference whether he's a Black Jew, or he's Israelite, a Muslim, a Pan Africanist?" If he's doing his job, then he's doing his job.
Yeah, and that's another question right there, though. I mean, I'm
now some people. I'm just saying that. I'm gonna give you an example, because remember Cecil B. Moore's position at that time. Now Cecil B. Moore was looked at as a man who would call out the bourgeois, call out the white folks. Call out anybody, but here's the thing. They said, as the president of NAACP, he broke all the people up because he was like, the way y'all want me to think, I'm not going to think. And if Rodney would do what he's supposed to do in that position, whatever they think about him wouldn't matter if he did what he was supposed to do, because Cecil was doing what he was supposed to do. And they didn't like Cecil.
Yeah, well,
that's my point.
Thank you for your contribution, man.
It's a pleasure. Keep up the good work. That research was great.
Talk to you.
Right.
Let's go to 4-4-4-4. 4-4, you there?
All right, what up, brother?
How are you?
Hear me, Yehudu. Yehudu. Mm-hmm. Y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Y'all hear me?
Yes.
Elliot. Well, look at here, fellas, man. See, I like your research on the subject, bro. But the time is, well, I'm going to go back to your boy, Professor Griff. He had to apologize, too. But that's why they kicked his ass out of Public Enemy. And I confronted him on the Carl Nelson show. When he said what he said about them devil folks that they run the Talmud, see? Well, I confronted him. I saw the article where he apologized to them fools. I think it was March something, 1983. It made him go to a synagogue of Satan down there in Miami and apologize. And he lied. I ain't want to argue with the brother because I know the truth. And he said, no, he ain't apologized. But it's written and documented. Just pull up, I think, in the Miami Times, something, 1990, it's either 83 or 93. I think it's 83. Well, you see Professor Griff went to Miami. But my thing is, man, when them no-growers do that, bro, we chastise them and forget about them and keep moving on, man. Don't give them no more energy, man. Once you find out that these Negroes scared, hey, bro, just turn your back on them like we did Nick Cannon. But see, they ain't studying, man. You got two athletes and not one athlete, yeah, and two entertainments, Ice Cube and Nick Cannon. Them Negroes don't know how to study, and they don't know how to do the right presentation to them Jews, man. I got on a dispute on the job I was on with this dude talking about he's Jew, white boy telling me he's Jew. I say, look, bro, we the original Hebrews, man. In the book, he got mad for trying to crack anti-Semitism. What happened, another white dude that we was working with, he said, dude, that black Big Western tell you the truth, man. Okay? As simple as that, man. And he kept moving on. I put his ass in his place to keep moving, man. But I want to talk about this UNIA, Universal Negro Improvement Association, man. Okay? It's been 100 years since Marcus Garvey gone, man. 100 years, good. I'm getting August. We celebrate August, September. I'm ready to start a UNAI bank, man, a credit union, where we can start putting our money in, man. That's why I was trying to tell y'all last Sunday about the black African people in Africa got 6 car dealerships, man. I know you was amped up, say we ain't talking about it now. And when I say stuff, I tie it in, man. See, I look at the glass half full. It's time for us to start moving, man. Especially with this economy going down now, there's so many opportunities for us if we put our money together, man. Okay? Forget about them Jews or whatever, whoever, them brothers and sisters selling out. It's our time now, man. That's the point I'm trying to make, man. I appreciate what the whole show conversation. You did a good job. But once we see them sell out, we point them out, keep moving, man. Okay, because I'm in the whirlwind, man. I got so many thoughts. I'm glad y'all getting ready to have a show with the Black Farmer, too, man. I heard about that, too. But I appreciate it, man. What you thinking about that, Richard?
Okay. I'm good. I'm good with you. I'm good. You know, it goes to the point of becoming organized.
Yes, sir.
You'll hear me constantly because that's the question now. How we do it? In our individual spheres, I'll just say we better do it. And then it gets into being organized is defining what your objective is. And what
yes, sir, because they're doing this sensitive around the world, Elliot. I sent you an article about in Israel where this, they found a picture of Netanyahu, I call it Know the YouTube, on a stage talking at a microphone with a Hitler sign, with his hand out of the Hitler sign. You saw that article, Elliot?
No, I didn't.
Well, check it out, man. I read the Israel Times to see what them devils doing, man. That's how I do.
But it was somebody in Israel. They found a picture of Netanyahu standing on the stage with his hand out talking about Heil Hitler when he was kind of young. And do you know, they sent the police to that dude's house and made him take down the damn Facebook post of Netanyahu for the truth coming out, man. And they, you know, they surrounded Netanyahu's house, man, in Israel, man. The people tired. We waking up, man. So while they fighting amongst themselves, okay, like I told y'all before, they fighting amongst themselves. Now, you got K Street and J Street with Obama. And them two factions of Hebrews, they ain't no Hebrews, take off. Please, please give me most high. Them devils, them fake imposters, the synagogue of Satan, they fighting amongst themselves, man. That's what
let me ask you something, Brother West.
Yeah.
However they feel about you, do you hear them saying anything like that?
Oh, when I told them what I said?
No. However they feel about you, do you ever hear them saying anything like that publicly?
Not to my face. Whatever they say behind my back. Hey, bro, I don't care.
Well, no, I said right public, now, public. And I'm not, when I say you, I'm not talking about you personally.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's what listen, I can't control.
Hey,
let me finish what I'm saying. Let me finish what I'm saying. Let me finish what I'm saying.
Okay.
I can't control how, you know, whatever you say necessarily. But see, right. What I'm trying to get you to understand, you don't have to use all that devil, this, that. You don't have to, because when they talk about you, they don't use those type of terms. But you know right. Who they talking about. So we don't have to do that. All you got to do is put the facts out there.
I'm getting ready to say what one of the rabbis said, what they said about us. Okay? But you know what he said.
Oh, yeah. Well, exactly. Now, he said something that should have been dealt with by people that had a voice, and they didn't. He came out
and they
said,
didn't, right?
Exactly. Yeah. He came out and called black folks monkeys.
Yeah.
And it should have been dealt with. But it wasn't. But I'm saying in general, they don't use those. They might agree with what he's saying. And they didn't attack him when he said it. So evidently they agree with his sentiments. But all I'm saying is in general, they don't do that. And we don't have to do that. Put out the facts. Let the facts speak for itself.
Yeah, that's what I did on that job while I was on, man.
All right.
And I shut them down with facts. That's what I do. I bring receipts, man. That's what I do. I bring receipts. Okay? And y'all know that. That's why I'm real, man. That's why I'm saying we go ahead and do what we going to do, man. It's time for us to go on and do what we going to do. Put our money together some kind of way. Do our thing, man. Like I said, with them brothers with them six car dealerships in Africa, man.
Well, you
okay,
said you...
I know I'm going to sure ain't driving no Ford. Any black person driving Ford is a damn fool.
Well, you said you...
And a Mercedes, too.
You said you putting together... You said you putting together the thing, so... You know, once you get it, then you know, we
I already got it, man. All we got to do, Richard, now, man,
is Richard.
Get y'all online and start a UNIA account, man.
Why you put Richard in it? You said you started it.
I'm saying I'm putting the message out there, man. I put the first $100 in it. I tell you that, my money good.
He said, go put me to work right now.
you got the connections, man, Richard, with the UNIA. Y'all having an August month, Black August.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying, man. I got thoughts and ideas, man. Okay, I got thoughts and ideas of what we can do, and I'm willing to be the crash that dummy and put the first $100 seed money in the account, man. Or we can go to start a Bitcoin, man. But they're getting ready to crash the economy anyway, man. There's so much options out there, man.
Well, listen, when the farmers come on, they're going to have some things that our folks can get involved in.
Yes, sir.
And you might be pleasantly surprised, and then you might have expected it. But believe me, they're going to have some programs that we can get involved in.
That's right, man. It's our time, man. Only person that's going to help us is us, black men, black women. Ain't nobody coming to help us but us, man. Okay, simple as that, man. And y'all doing a good job, man. You pointed out with the truth and check that audit because they're going to try to censor everything, man. That's what they're trying to do. Anybody that say something against them, they'll try to censor you. But they can't censor the truth. Because I know a friend of mine, Darren Muhammad, man. He good. Y'all think you heard of him, folks. They shut his whole program off. But he was using Facebook, YouTube. Okay, they shut his whole show down, man. So I'm glad y'all got this platform right here. And I try to be cool with my language because I know how these folks are. But they time up, man. I love y'all, man. It's our time, black folks. Okay? Thank out of the world we're in, man. Aim for you mighty black people. Aim. Can we do it? Yeah, we can do it. We're going to do it. Peace and blessings. I love y'all.
Thank you for the contribution, brother. Let's go to Newport News. Newport News, are you there?
Good evening, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
Another great class. I'm just going to throw in a side point when you were talking about, because I don't know if everybody keyed on it, but when you were talking about Jones up there in Detroit, one of the points you made that I think you kind of skipped over, but it goes back to part of the conversation you were just having with Brother West. These people have their language, and they speak it. And they don't go out of their way to demonize somebody in public so it takes away from their message. What I mean? When you explain that thing going on with Jones and they got her running against the Palestinian,
mm-hmm.
You know that's actually two different factions of Jews fighting.
Yeah, exactly.
They want, and that's the point. You were going over it in detail, but you never really made that point because I think Richard came in. And I can kind of sense you were making that point that these are two different factions of Jews. Now, one of them wants Palestinian out because she's raising hell on the international scene. So what are they going to do? Go into a 80% black city. And matter of fact, I put the facts in there for you, but my hands were dirty when you first said something, but you know me. So I stuck it in there to show you. 80% of Detroit proper is black. But you already know how they keep the money out of the black neighborhood is all of the other metro Detroit cities out of something like 165 or something, the numbers in the chat, about 115 of them are predominantly white or all majority white. And then they don't tell you what the other 35 or 40 are, but the whole point is most of the Negroes is in Detroit proper. And they're going to use a black representative to get rid. Now, they look like they're fighting each other, but you see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to get rid of the Palestinian, but the black person they're putting in ain't doing nothing for black people. What are they doing? Making damn sure the Jewish businessmen get their money. That's the point I wanted to make, brother. You know, and I love it. Tim hit on it. One of the reasons I love your platform is you do the research. Stay with it, brother. Keep doing the work.
Thank you for your contribution. Richard, let's go to another one. Let's go to 267 again. 267? Let's put them back on hold. Let's go to 215. 215?
Hey, Brother Elliot. How you doing?
How are you, sir?
Hi, Brother Richard. How y'all brothers doing tonight?
I'm right now.
Praises be to Allah. You know, first, Brother Elliot, before I get in the heat of my discussion, that's when you was talking earlier when you and Richard was doing your commentary, you mentioned a young lady by the name of Monica Conyers. Is she related to the late, great John Conyers?
You know what? I don't know. It would seem, you know, she's from Detroit. I don't know, to be honest.
I was just, if you can do your research, Ellie, because like Brother Otis just said and Brother Tim, you and Richard did a masterful job with your research because, like you said, like Brother Richard's says time and time again, that historical perspective, man. Y'all did the y'all research was masterful, man. You know, you know, Brother Elliot. I'm gonna deal with Sister Talib because I'm just gonna tell you right off the bat. I'm speaking for me now. I love my sister Rashida Talib. She's a Palestinian sister. She got my support 20 times over. I'm gonna deal with that in a second. But you know, when Brother West was speaking a few minutes ago, you know, it just shows you the arrogance of Brother Elliot and Brother Richard and the time from the Waking List audience. And see, this is a tactic a lot of these white Jews have been doing for years because Brother West tells him, now notice, Brother West didn't cuss him out. He said, we the original Hebrews. He going to call Brother West an anti-Semite. And see, this is what I'm saying. See, this is the kind of stuff they've been getting away with for years. All you have to do is, and see, like you said, they try to use stuff like the Hitler thing with Deshaun Jackson, the smoke screen, or some caricature of some hook-nosed Jew, as or Minister Rodney's case. They try to use that as some kind of thing. But they said they, but they're upset with the content, because when you dare say that you as a black man or woman is the chosen people of the book, you the true Hebrews, they hit you with the anti-Semitic thing. And Brother West proved it when he said it just now. Brother West told him, I'm the teacher Hebrew. He going to go and I guess he went to HR or whomever and try to get Brother West probably fired by saying he's an anti-Semite. I mean, these people, man, they are, man, I'm telling you, man, we have got to counter this. And that goes back but with the brother said a few minutes ago, we have got to find a way. And, you know, Richard, you said we got to, Richard, you said it best, Richard, we got to find a way, because they're going to keep doing what they're doing because that's their nature. That's who they are. But we got to find a way that when we say things, we ain't backing down. We're going to stand by what we said. If y'all don't like it, you just got to live with it. Tough. You know what I mean? Because it's not just trying to emasculate black men and women. It's got to stop, man. This is going on for you. You said, Ellie, y'all did the historical context, you and Richard, going all the way back to Joe Springham and W.E.B. Du Bois, you know, Crimes and Fool, man. I'm glad you did that. And Elliot, please, brother, I beg you, Brother Elliot, hold on to that clip, that piece about Kwame and Crimes and Fool, man, and a covenant with Minister Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam, because, Elliot, that right there could be a piece that we can use as future reference to really start exposing these people. So, Elliot, I beg you, brother, say that piece, man, because that can be a valuable tool, man, because you can't argue with facts. Like Brother West, the rap professor, they always talk about receipts. When you got the receipts and stuff, they can't argue with that. So that can be used as a future bargaining chip, for lack of a better word. So definitely holding to that piece. That's valuable, man. You know, and you know, on that, on see, how we, and again, we got to be very careful with some of our people. See, a lot of our people and stuff, I don't know the sister's heart, sister in Detroit, Brenda Jones, but one thing I do know, like you always say, Brother Elliot, white folks and Jewish people, white Jews are no different than they are than any other white Anglo-Saxon, whether it be Irish, Cap, whatever, Polish. They play this long game. They play chess while we play checkers. Who's to say that their sister, you know, embraced Minister Farrakhan from the beginning? That was only, that could be a strategy. She could have been embracing him, but, you know, to get some kind of street cred with black people. Because see, a lot of people, they play that game. They slick too, and a lot of them, they used by these so-called white ethnic groups, whether it be Jews, Irish, or whatever. But she could have been sent there to act like she down with Minister Farrakhan, embrace them, go to a couple of Savior's Day and all that stuff. So, again, be careful with that kind of stuff. So now I can bet you one thing, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and I can say this with unequivocally. Now you said in that clip, Brother Elliot, how she had praised Minister Farrakhan, she came to Savior's Day. I tell you what, brother, if she wins that election, and I pray to Allah, I'm going to do my best to hope she don't win, because I'm going to make sure I tell my friends and stuff in Detroit that live in that area to vote for Sister Rashida Tlaib. But I'm going to tell you this. If she did by chance get win, Ellie, and remember, you dance to the tune who dance you. I guarantee, Brother Ellie Mitchell, I bet any of y'all brothers, every dollar y'all got in the bank, she won't be praising Minister Farrakhan no more. And matter of fact, I'm going to go a step further. When them Jews tell her to jump and how high, I guarantee you she'll come out and denounce Minister Farrakhan, because you see that pattern there, because you said it yourself with Kwame Fulmer. He made a covenant out of his own accord. Remember, the minister didn't go to him. Like he's trying to say, he invited the minister to come to the Congressional Black Caucus. He invited him, and he said he was going to stick with the covenant, never will outside forces separate. Some of them white Jews, some Zionists put pressure on Kwame. He folded like a cheap deck of cards. You know what I mean? So believe me, Ellie, her days of praise the Minister Farrakhan is over, brother. Don't be surprised for the next, as you get close to that election, if she don't come right on out and denounce the minister, repudiate him, and even call him an anti-Semite. Don't be surprised if that happened, brother. I'm telling you. Just remember, Brother Joe told you that first. You know what I mean? So all I'm saying is that, again, I'm supporting Sister Rashida Tlaib. I've always loved the sister because she's a courageous Palestinian sister. She got guts, and I support her and everything, and I hope she wins. I hope the black committee up there don't get fooled and vote for their sickness. All she's being used by these Zionists and stuff, and support Rashida Tlaib, because like I said, if she get in office, them Jews going to be running Detroit. They might call it the Jewish city of Detroit, because they're going to be running the whole city, and she's going to get them control over that whole city. She's a disgrace and everything. And you see this time and time again. They're using a black woman, some conservative black woman up in New York. No matter whatever you may think of AOC, I'll still take her over that black woman who they're going to run some old niggas, Republican Party Party, the conservatives, they running some old Negro up there to run against her up there. See, these people are very long term. They play the long game, man. They always get some Negro, male or female, to run against somebody who they don't like, who stands up against them, who speaks out against them. See what I mean? And we got to be very careful of that and stuff, man, and support these people just because they black or whatever like that. Hell, in a perfect world, Ellen Richard, I would love to support every black man and woman in a perfect world. But we don't live in a perfect world. We live in a world where Negroes, they might have the same skin, but they sure is not our kin. You know, if you get what I'm saying. So, I mean, we got to be very careful with things like that. So, I'm supporting Rashida Tlaib unapologetically. I'm supporting her. And like you said, Ellie, you will deal with it from another. This show, the sister Minnesota, Omar, and we know she's not a perfect sister, but she's a courageous sister. She has spoken out against Israel and the mistreatment of black people in Palestine and Palestinians and Ethiopian Jews. She's being attacked and everything. They want to get rid of her. So, I mean, we see this pattern with them and stuff like that. So, again, we cannot let ourselves be fooled because we see how these with the game that these people play, man. They're very deep, and they was not above them where they'll use a black man or woman to further their evil aims when it comes to our people and stuff, man. I mean, the beat just goes on and on and on with these people, man. And, again, you and Richard did a masterful job because y'all dealt with things from a historical context and stuff to show how these people have been doing this stuff even back during the days of W.E.B. Du Bois and Joe Springham. I mean, these people, this stuff don't stop with these people, man. They've been doing this stuff for years. So in closing, L.A. Richard, you see here in Philadelphia, again, the Negroes, it's one thing Minister Rodney's situation exposed. It exposed these phony black politicians, like you said, Elliot. Many of them have praised Minister. This is what show you how controlled they are by these people. Anthony Hardy Williams in the past, with his despicable self and others, they have praised Minister Rodney for his good work in the community, but for dealing with the violence in the community, dealing with social issues facing black people. Then all of a sudden, all of them just, it's like if they all ganged up on a minister at the same time. You had Vinson Hughes. You had the twinkle-toed congressman, Dwight Evans. All of them came in like a bum rush, Elder Richard. They all attacked Minister Rodney. You know what I mean? All came out. And these are people that praised Minister Rodney in the past. And Brother Elliot, remember I mentioned to you about Bob Brady? I told you. Now, Bob Brady's another one. He has praised Minister Rodney. Now, think about this, Brother Elliot. We're not close with this couple more comments, and I promise I'm gone so other calls to get on. Now, Bob Brady, a former congressman, or depending on who you believe, Ellie, he might still be the congressman, depending on how you look at it. But anyway, he's the head of the Democrat committee. Imagine the kind of boost, Ellie and Richard, that Minister Rodney could have got. You would have had a powerful white man like Bob Brady, who's a former United States congressman and the head of the Democrat Party in Philadelphia, who has worked with Minister Rodney on many things. Minister Rodney even considered him a friend. He even said that he was a good white man. But again, Elliot, like you said about the station, the Tushler station, you heard crickets. I didn't hear Bob Brady say a word. Ellie, you know and I know, if Bob Brady would have issued any kind of statement on Minister Rodney's behalf, those Zionists would have backed off. I'm going to say it again. Bob Brady been a powerful white man and Irish, and a former congressman, if he would have issued any kind of statement on Minister Rodney's behalf that he's not an anti-Semite, he's a good man, I work with him, them Zionists would have backed off because they don't go after white people. You know what I mean? They would have backed off. Bob Brady, you could hear crickets around Bob Brady, right? He didn't say a word on Minister Rodney's behalf. Though Minister Rodney on many occasions has went out of his way to praise Bob Brady. You follow what I'm saying, Brother Elliot?
Yeah, I
didn't say a word. Didn't say a word on Minister Rodney's behalf, his so-called friend. You know what I mean? Our people got to start looking at this stuff, how these people roll, man. You know what I mean? These people, when you need them, they let you down the most. When you need them, they let you down the most, man. So, I mean, you see clearly what's going on. And lastly, I want to thank Brother Jay from New York. Because Brother Jay called the rap professor last week, and Brother Jay talked about that phony first so-called black president, Bill Clinton, when he got up there and was like, John Lewis's homegoing service, you know, basically throwing little slurs at Kwame Ture, you know, also known as Stokely Carmichael, about how, yeah, you know, he lost the leadership and stuff. But, you know, John, he didn't let that deter him because John kept on with his message of nonviolence and not being divisive and all that kind of stuff, cause of taking a shot at Kwame Ture. And that's why I say y'all got to be careful when these Europeans, whether it be Clinton or Bush or even Obama, for that matter, when they go out of their way to praise a black man. And I'm not trying to speak ill of the deceased brother, but let's be honest, we're not going to raise him to no status of Dr. King or Malcolm X because he was not there. You know what I mean? He did a lot of things, like Brother Jay and others have said. Brother Ralph, he did a lot of things that hurt black people, whether he meant it or not, it happened. He helped sign a crime bill. He did some things that went against the interests of black people. So all this, so when you see white people like Bill Clinton praise, because they want to see all about people passive, taking ass whippings, you know, praying Jesus, this is why we taking beat butt kickers, not fighting back, not standing up like strong black. And what they want to see, if white folks like Clinton and Bush had the way, we all be John Lewis. You know what I'm saying? They'd love us all to be. They don't want the members to be King or Malcolm or Marcus Garvey or whomever. They want us all to be John Lewis's and stuff. So we got to be very careful with that when they praise a man like John Lewis. We never seen white folks got their way to have five sinners for a black man. Think about that. When did white America love a black man so much? You know, that they have literally five sinners for one black man. Come on, man. Come on. You know, I mean, we just got to look at these people for who they are and the games they play on our people. And them same ones that's praising John Lewis, they signing legislation right now to deny people in this country unemployment benefits. And so people's benefits went expired with the 31st. So many people in this country, hardworking black folks, white folks, whatever, they earn a living for their families, going to be struggling out here to pay their bills if this unemployment is not extended. But yet they claim they love John Lewis. I mean, come on, man, please. I mean, these people are so full of crap. Man, don't get me started, Ellie. They're so full of crap. It ain't even funny. But anyway, Ellie Richard, thanks for your time, brother. Good show, Ellie Richard. Man, again, I thank y'all brothers for doing the research. And like I said, Ellie, keep that closet information thing on handy about that COVID, because that is something that we can use as a reference tool, because like you said, you can't argue with hit facts and stuff. So that's something that you can definitely keep in your, as you say, in the archives. So it's going to be a useful tool, mark my words. Thanks, Ellen Richard, for your time. And Mr. Ellen, put me on mute as I go off, okay?
Thanks for your call.
Thanks, Ellen. Mm-hmm.
Richard, let's go to 646.
Yes, Brother Richard. And Brother Elliot, how are y'all two good brothers doing?
Everything's good.
Good now.
I would just like to say tonight, your brother Wes made me think of Fredo Corleone, the Godfather, when he said, I got ideas too. All I can say is
Richard, I don't know why you gonna say that. Why you gonna say something like that? Richard,
he said I got ideas too, and I just started thinking about my man Fredo Corleone, and look, it's a beautiful thing, man. That's all. I'll leave it like that. But listen, really, and all jokes aside, as far as this brother in your city with the NAACP, I'm very disappointed in our scholars, because our scholars know the truth. They know the history of anti-Semitism, Semitism, and all of that nonsense. And they are constantly allow our leaders to get cut off at the knees whenever they speak the truth about the Jew. None of our leaders come to the defense of our brothers and sisters in regards to this whole Semitic, anti-Semitic thing. Now, they're not going to debate Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam in regards to it, which I think, you know, the Nation ain't going to do a great job. Let's just keep it real. They'll do a good job, but I don't think they'll do a great job. But the point of the matter is, there are scholars out there who know the truth and who can articulate the truth that should be coming to the defense of Brother Hall and others who get caught up in this whole anti-Semitism nonsense. And if we don't get to the point to where as we challenge this Jew in regards to this subject matter, they're going to just keep on pumping us. They're going to keep on controlling us and cutting us off at the knees and making us act like little boys and girls, and they're just going to go along with the propaganda. So at some point in time, we just kind of have to call these people out and we're going to have to deal with it, and we're going to have to address it, and let it be known that we are the original Semites, and that they're not going to use this propaganda to constantly put us in a box and refer to us as anti-Semites.
But this is not an intellectual debate. I apologize, but I'm I apologize to everyone on this, because I really did believe that we keep missing the mark. Yes, we have been debating this here, not even debating. We have enunciated who is the original Hebrews. That's been clear. I know that's been clear at least since the turn of the last century, but definitely since the 40s. This is not an intellectual debate. This is them saying they're exerting their organizational power to say, we're going to hold you in check for what we say is an offensive act.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I mean, you can put
in that. It's deeper than that. And see, what makes it deeper than that is...
What's deeper than that?
Let me just finish this one point. We constantly allow them to get away with it. We don't use our scholars and those of us who know the truth to challenge it. We just go along and capitulate every time they turn around and call us an anti-Semite or something. It has to stop.
You're missing my...
We actually have the right to be men and women in this country, and we have to have a right to challenge these individuals. And until it gets to the point that we stop challenging them or we don't challenge them, then we deserve whatever we get. Now, if the brother in Philly decides that he's going to apologize, hey, I tell you right now, I lose respect for him.
But that's
just like I got no respect for him.
Hold on a second, Jay. Now, Richard.
Yes.
Your premise, repeat that again, because I wanted to say something in reference to what you said.
That as long as we don't have, it's not about the knowledge of who's the original Hebrew. It's about having them, they are utilizing their power to say they have been offended and you can't do anything about that.
Now hold that point. Now, here's another example of what you just stated. Now, I read on the thing where they are cultivating this woman to run against the woman in Detroit, Rashida Tlaib. Now, she's a Palestinian, which is Semitic.
Mm-hmm.
But they call her, she's anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. See, that only goes to show what you're saying. It backs up what you just stated. It's not the fact that they don't know. These white folks ain't necessarily, some of them are, white folks ain't necessarily stupid of all these things that you're talking about. It's not necessary to debate them about any historical what's true and what's not. It's not. Just like if they do a movie talking about, and they do it all the time, talking about ancient Egypt and show all the actors as white, it's not necessary to have no historical debate showing that these men weren't white. They already know that. They want to do it because they feel that they have the power and they do what they want.
And the power of propaganda is the power of being able to shape the minds and the thoughts and the behaviors of who they wish to control, even if that is themselves.
You gotta be willing to go along with it. Why must we at this stage of the game and our development as a people go along with that sugar on the IC?
Because we're not developed. Because we're not organizationally developed as a people. That's the thing. If we were, now that might be a question for discussion.
If we're not organizedly developed at this time, we're in the world of trouble, bro. Come on.
And if you look at social indicators, even with Rona or Corona 19 that just went by, and they pronounced to all of us who are locked in for the last 4 to 6 months that we black folks are mostly affected by something because of the social conditions we are in, then yes, we are in a whole lot of trouble. And that's why the only way we're going to get out of this trouble is to when we move our dialogue to how is it looking at us, looking at our history, how are we going to change ourselves from where we are to where we're weak? And they said that in 1864. We're weak to where we're.
I just say this. We need to do something in regards to how we deal and how we address these situations. And let me go with this lastly. In regards to John Lewis, I mean, a lot of people say a lot of things about him. I got a lot of issues with the guy. I just leave it at this from this point forward. Look at his community. When you look at his community, ask yourself, what did black people get for all of the time that he served in Congress? And if it was just to give us the right to vote for some white man to have ownership over us, I mean, we ain't get nothing in return. Because I know his community is not at the level where it should be. And that to me is tragic. Just like my community is not at the level where it should be after having someone like Charlie Rangel in Congress for 40-some years. And that's what we have to get to the point to be honest about. Because you want to call him a hero. In certain respects, he was a hero. But also in other respects, the man was an absolute disaster. And that's the truth. That's really the truth. And sadly, you know, for what he, as a man, put us into, the type of quagmire that we're in, I just hope we figure it out and get out of it. Hotep, and like I said, Brother Wes, I got ideas too. Have a good night, fellas. Put me on mute.
Take care.
Boy, I'm telling you, baby.
Me and my brother Wes alone.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Brother Wes trying to work me, sir, but I already now, I know who my supervisor is.
Richard, the you know, Joe referred to comments that Jay made on the terrestrial program here in Philadelphia about I'm distracted because I was reading something about Clinton. And I think you spoke about that in our private conversation we had about his comments about Kwame Ture.
Right.
I think he called him Stokely Carmichael at the funeral. And I tried to get all of what he said. I just got a little portion. And because Joe from Philadelphia made comments about Jim Clyburn about 2 weeks ago on NPR, said something in reference to Kwame Ture. Mm-hmm. And this was before Lewis had passed.
Right.
Now, if I can pull this up, I just want to, because I think it's short, what I had. Let me see if I can find it. I think this is it, if this is it.
About the critique or criticism that followed, I want you to take a quick look at what he had to say.
And I say there were two or three years there where the movement went a little bit too far towards Stokely, but in the end, John Lewis prevailed.
Now, number one, but that only goes to what we've been talking about tonight. You had black people and black elected officials that were sitting there. You got this white man critiquing a black organization and giving assessments of Kwame Ture and John Lewis at that time. I ain't talking about what he became at that time. Their vision on the organization. We had Brother Mukasa Dada, who was known as Willie Wicks at that time, talk about that same situation.
Mm-hmm.
And Lewis and why he got voted out. This man was a member of that organization. Talking about Mukasa Dada, Brother Ricks at that time. He took the beatings and he delivered some beatings to some whites. He said it on the program. So he said why they got rid of John Lewis and voted him out. This clown, Clinton, he going to give some opinions. You ain't got no right to talk about any of our ancestors, what they did, how they thought, or anything else. That didn't seem to rub none of these other folks the wrong way, like Obama and the rest of them that was there. But it sure rubbed me the wrong way, he and him give his opinion about Kwame Ture. You don't know nothing about Kwame Ture, or what he was doing, how he thought, or anything else. At that time, you was probably some member of some old supremacist group with your ancestor, your father and mother.
But since we talked earlier, but look what he was saying, Elliot, in that expression. For a few years, you know, Clinton is the symbolic representation of the system of white hegemony, right? Mm-hmm. And he's saying that you know, for a moment there, as the symbol, he's saying we looking out and seeing for a moment there, we almost lost total control over blacks who were looking at having hegemony over their own selves.
Yeah, it was going in the wrong direction, but John Lewis brought it back. Yeah, that's basically what he said. Yeah, exactly.
And we have to look at that because, again, we keep saying you brought up the whole thing of Hubert Harrison, and that moment, it's like the question of going, you know, in the wrong direction, taking that back. You know, we're not going to be radical. Going in the wrong direction. So what for some of us, what we need to be emphasizing is that he was saying we were on the right path, that Kwame was on the right path. And looking in 2020, you know, because he was talking about John Lewis at that moment, that was what, 64, 66? That was in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lewis just died. He ain't saying that, you know, like the wrong path was now. He's saying then.
Yeah, then, exactly.
What he did at that moment is the symbol of what he was able to do for the rest of his life in being on the correct path. Because the organization was getting ready to go, and him too, on that wrong path.
Wow.
That's something that we need to take and embrace and recognize that no, Clinton and them, I mean Obama and them wouldn't say that because those and us. I'm sorry, y'all. Those Negroes seem to be enfranchised and keeping us on the wrong path.
Yeah.
If what we get out of it is insults and a quality of life that is devastating.
Let me go back to Newport News comment. Newport News?
Yeah, gentlemen. I think I agree with Richard. I was sticking in the chat telling you, you know, hindsight is kind of 2020. You know, you had Brother Willie on that was running through my mind there a couple of weeks ago. Literally, what I got from Clinton is he actually had the gall to basically tell Black America, I remember the time period, like he said, for about 3 years there in the movement, and he said we're going in the wrong direction. But in reality, what he's saying is, it would have been upheaval if Stokely had won, and America would not have been able to do what? Manage this last 50 years with using somebody like John Lewis. As a matter of fact, everybody that's come on here has pretty much said what John Lewis got wrong. And people got on my case for years when I said it. I have no disrespect for John or getting his head knocked or nothing. But any man tells you, I didn't hate the police, I said thank you for your service or some old mess like that. I don't mean to butcher it, but was it absurd that you telling me you marching for your people in liberation, you get abused on the bridge? But here's the important part that Clinton pushed out that a lot of people miss, and I get upset when people keep talking about John Lewis. The white man won that battle when he just told you about John Lewis. He made it sound like it was one person that beat.
Right.
Buddy Tillman will tell you, in the reality of it, hundreds of black people got injured and beaten in that.
Mm-hmm.
So what actually was a mini massacre, had it not been for national TV, it would have been a complete massacre. It ended up being a mass assault. So what I'm saying to you is, Clinton had the gall to really say, y'all were on the verge of maybe pushing us to do the right thing, but thank God, here comes John Lewis. And people get upset, like other callers would say. You look at his historic neighborhood, and here's another one. Let's go back to the main one. I don't want to just single out John Lewis. The same cool people that tell us that they got 5 decades and they formal civil rights people, all of them can show you consistent pictures, and I've watched them on social media even brag about remembering what year they missed the Selma Jubilee. But I went on a rampage on Twitter and told them this. You bragging about showing up at the Edmund Pettus Bridge to get a damn picture for 50 years, bragging about which years you didn't go because you had other important personal things or whatever. But if you Google the poorest cities in each state, you will find out in that state, Selma is still the poorest damn city.
Right.
That, to me, is the failure of all of them in my generation, and I don't let nobody off the hook for it, including the local ones. I'll stop there.
And I have to bring back what Baba Dada said, because when they went, those young people, and we're talking about young people, right, that willingly put themselves on the line, they thought that they was going to go for a frontal assault. They didn't realize that once they got there, that the game had been changed.
Hey, look, Rick, I'm just going to throw this in. I don't know the exact mileage from Selma to hit Yorktown where I am now, but I can tell you this. We tore up stuff. We tore up, and this is just a little country town. And there was a lot of towns just like that that said, no, you might have got rid of Stokely, but you ain't got rid of the message. And actually, those are the people that stirred us away from the upheaval. I tell you, I take great pride in right now. I see white folks I ain't seen in 40 years. I'm 6 inches taller, 50 years older. And they look at me and say, they got that little, that damn little Huey Newton. They got that little H.R.A.P. Brown. I mean, we took it serious. And I think if we hadn't let, I'll put it this way. When I argue with academics, I tell them this. If we hadn't let morality take over and follow John Lewis, we would have done much better, because I've heard that my man Elliot say it over and over, and I've been telling people, if there was any such thing as morality coming from that side of the opposition, we wouldn't be 400 years later still talking about the abuse.
There you go.
Thank you for your contribution. Richard, interesting dialogue tonight, man. It's always good when we can bring these things out and let the people talk. One thing before we go, I just want to read this statement again because it kind of jumped out the page at me. And this was from the Jewish Telegraph, the one that was from October the 7th, 1993. And this was in reaction to the covenant that was proposed by the NAACP by the Black Caucus and the Nation of Islam. Let me read these first three paragraphs again. And it says, Black Caucus ties with Farrakhan could harm cooperation with Jews. The Jewish Telegraph Agency, that's who did this report. It says, new ties between the Congressional Black Caucus and the controversial black Muslim leader Louis Farrakhan has cast a shadow on the future of black-Jewish cooperation on legislative issues of mutual concern. For the moment, at least, the future of such coalition work remains ambiguous as the Jewish community sorts out the implications and the extent of the warming relationship between the caucus and Farrakhan, who is viewed as anti-Semitic by many in the Jewish community. This is the part, Richard, that knocks me down. Jewish groups and legislators have long worked closely with the caucus on such issues as civil rights, aid to cities, public education, and the fight against poverty. And the caucus, which currently comprises 39 members of the House of Representatives and one senator, have a long history of solid support from Israel. How has that support been working out? Civil rights, aid to cities, public education, the fight against poverty. Are you kidding? Look at the numbers on each one of those things is off the charts. In fact, Philadelphia got the one of the highest poverty rates of any city over a million. What is it, 28%? And in some of these communities, it's like 40%, and it's probably worse with this coronavirus. I'm talking about pre-corona. Public education in the toilet, as far as these public schools in black neighborhoods are concerned. In fact, a lot of the public schools in the black neighborhoods have been converted to townhouses for middle-class whites. Whether they're Jews or regular Anglos. So, what? Cooperation on these issues? If that's the cooperation that we've gotten, they failed. Talking about that need to have a difficult conversation. No, the difficult conversation that black folks need to have is that you failed. And you intentionally failed. I just want to reemphasize that paragraph there, because that's... You know, I don't understand some of these folks, to be honest, but I know what we got to do.
You're right, and I want to quickly in that, I'm gonna call it that, my closing, because you hear me reiterating the same point, especially in this month, about organize, right? And so there's two things I want to share, maybe give some definition of because I think the time for awakening audience, we have to hold each other accountable for those of us who believe that Kwame was going down, or as a symbol, he was going down the right path. And this is what we need to do. And one of them is going to that, to that ancient concept of Saruj, or, in relationship to repair, which is going to the relationship to reparations. And when I say ancient, I'm saying, comedic, ethical, because we have to be ethical, right? Our organizational process has to be ethical. So it has to have some ethical direction. And therefore, I just want to emphasize these 7 points. To raise up that which is in ruins, to repair that which is damaged, to rejoin that which is severed, to replenish that which is depleted, to strengthen that which is weakened, to set right that which is wrong, and to make flourish that which is insecure and underdeveloped. But every organization, and I'll just end with this, Elliot, because, when we talk about organizing, and we have to recognize that that's when you talk about chess, that's a structure that you build. That comes out of the ingenuity of individuals, like Brother West saying, I'm going to give you some work. We, at that point, we're beginning to become organized, even if it's just the two of us, right? We got a plan. But I want to be clear what is that organizing is. Every organized human activity, from the making of pots to the placing of a man on the moon, gives rise to two fundamental and opposing requirements. The division of labor into various tasks to be performed and the coordination of these tasks to accomplish the activity. Organizations coordinate their work and mutual adjustment achieves the coordination of work by simple process of informal communication. And that's what we do here at Time for Awakening, right? We're giving information and providing communication. So that's a part of that organizing process, but we have to be able to do tasks. We can't just keep talking to be organized, and we have to be able to perform those tasks, and those tasks have to be coordinated to a certain end. And if we're going to use the era, you know, of what happened when they, what was that in Mississippi, that they, the Freedom Mississippi movement, and they challenged the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. Adams County.
Right. They went there, those same young people went in there in a hostile environment, and in no time, with hard work coordinating, taking on the task, providing that information or informal communication, they were able to go to that Democratic convention and Fannie Lou Hamer and, you know, upseated. And that's what Clinton was talking about, right? They upseated that Democratic Party, made them damn white Southerners shift eventually to the Republican Party. That's what we got to do. That's what being organized. And when we do that, then nobody is going to make us apologize and educate us like we some ignorant children that don't know and don't have no clear understanding of our of fictitious or historical references of who is who when we're the oldest people on the planet. That's, I just wanted to bring
Richard, that before we go, give me your opinion, close it out. Because, you know, I had some opinions on why I think that Clinton, now Clyburn said it before him, but why Clinton used the funeral of Lewis to mention something in reference to Kwame Ture's approach. I believe that Europeans see all of what's going on here, especially among you. It's important for them to monitor what's going on among our people, and especially the youth.
Right.
They see all these things, just like we've had the men on here talking about August is on fire and all these events. They see these things. They see these things going on in all these cities. They want to try to stay two steps ahead, not one step. They want to try to stay two steps ahead of our people.
Mm-hmm.
So you make little references here and there.
Right. Propaganda.
Yeah, it's a point to why they're doing this. We don't need to be playing chess anymore, checkers anymore, while these people playing chess, and then we just reacting to something that's been said or done.
Mm-hmm.
These people trying to plan out moves. He said that at that funeral for a reason. To be honest, he didn't have no reason to mention Kwame Ture at John Lewis's funeral. Mm-hmm. And especially the way he said it, that didn't even fit, to be honest. But it was said for a reason. Just like Jim Clyburn, it felt it necessary, and his was probably from pressure, to mention something about Kwame Ture and Lewis and their approaches.
You know, Elliot, it's, you have to stop me when you do these things, because it becomes interesting that Clinton and his relationship to Haiti. But let's not look at what the devastation that Clinton, and they're still talking about what Clinton devastation is in Haiti, but what Haiti represent to black people when you talk about the wrong direction. Right? And he being there and what he was able to do, and Clyburn being in South Carolina, and we look at what historically, when we place it in historic, the symbolic references, and he brings up Kwame because of, wasn't it two historical, almost successful revolutions that happened in South Carolina? Mm-hmm. Or at least one, Denmark Vesey.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
So he got to, he as, because him and what you call him, they were together. As he say, you know, they came to the Congress almost together and they were in the South together. So when we put it in symbolic reference and propaganda, but we look at it from our own historical lens, they're saying, telling their folks, look, as you said, we better look at these young folks because right now they're getting steam and they're creating relationship, an intergenerational relationship of people who was there, like Baba Dada.
Mm-hmm.
And talking to them and strategizing and using these new tools and mobilizing and connecting like those brothers who was on the other week.
Yeah, they listen, they monitor the same way they seem to know everything. Soon as you put something on social media, they're on it, especially some type of person with some type of prominence, whether it's mm-hmm. an athlete, an entertainer, elected official, or head of an organization. Soon as you put something on social media, they on it like white on rice. So you mean to tell me you don't think they monitoring what these young people are doing in these cities? They are monitoring it. They know exactly what they're doing or trying to do.
And that's what we need to be able to protect them.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I just wanted to throw that out there, just food for thought.
Appreciate it.
Before we leave tonight, let me go through the lineup on Time for an Awakening Media on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. That's from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Always interesting dialogue and guests. In fact, Brother Oshie told me that Brother Dada is going to be on his program, I think, Friday coming up.
Is it Friday? Oh,
I think
okay.
It's Renoco Friday. And then Brother Dada, he'll send out some announcements of the correct date that they're coming on. But I think Brother Renoco is coming on with him, and then Brother Mukasa Dada will be on with him to talk about some things. So it'll be an interesting conversation, always on African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. From 6 to 8, later on Monday evening, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. That's from 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening Media. From 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with host Dr. Maria Kamban and Sister Nataki Kamban. From 9 to 10, Conversation Reparations. That's the first and third Monday of every month. That's from 9 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media. Tuesday, 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. That's from 8 to 10 on Tuesday evening. On Thursday, from 8 to 10, from 6 to 8, I'm sorry, after 7, program is on. And on Fridays, Time for Awakening Media is back. Time for Awakening is back from 8 to 10. Saturdays, from 4 to 6, Black Sister Talk is on from 4 to 6 on Time for an Awakening Media. And then from 7 to 9, the Elders of Sankofa. That's from 7 to 9 on Saturday evenings. And then on Sunday, Time for an Awakening is back from 7 o'clock p.m. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Oh, you know, before we go, Richard, let me also reiterate, because one of the events will be already started by the time we come on next week. Just wanted to mention some of the upcoming events again. For August, as soon as I pull up in front of me, the 16th annual African Independence Day and Maya Day celebration, which would be Saturday. In fact, it was Saturday. I got to talk to and get Brother Obi back on. Let's see how things went. In fact, those two events, we already talked about in Cobra's event and the African Demise Day celebration was Saturday. Oh, my goodness. Wow. Things are jumping up on us quickly. We got next weekend, the RBG Centennial Conference and Global Accord for the Development of the Sovereign State of Africa, which is August 8th and 9th. The 100 Years in the Whirlwind virtual conference, August 14th to the 16th, and also the Race First Conference, Race First Rally Against White Terrorism, which is August 16th at 2 p.m. in Lafayette Park in Baltimore, Maryland. Three remaining upcoming events. Two, we're going to get a little update on probably next week with some of the participants and the organizers involved. So again, I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards the awakening. Peace.
Take care. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. Children, soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
till then to save the children. To save the children.